Welcome to the Armour Men's Health Show with Dr. Mystery and Donna Lee.
Hello and welcome to the Armour Men's Health Show. This is Dr. Mystery, your host, here as always by my co-host Donna Lee.
That's right. Can I add producer to my title?
You can, but then you actually have to get the stuff done properly.
Oh, okay. Well, there's that. Damn it.
So I wouldn't set the bar that high. As our partner, Dr. Lucas Giacomidis, says, I put the bar really low and then step right over it. I'm a board-certified urologist. This is a men's health show. This show is brought to you by NAU Urology Specialists, the urology specialty clinic that I started in 2007. Mm-hmm. We love taking care of you and all of your urologic needs. I think you're going to find yourself getting a real special level of care with us. When you're diagnosed with prostate cancer, you're going to see a physical therapist, you're going to see a nutritionist, you're going to see the
sex therapist
if necessary, just whatever you need for whether you have a cancer diagnosis or a sexual health diagnosis. I think that for those of you with sexual health problems that want a higher level of care, you really can't get a more comprehensive clinic than us. When it comes to other urologic needs, I think I can say the same.
I agree. And don't forget, people listening, our brand new listeners especially, that we have awards for Best Sexual Health Podcast, Best Men's Wellness Podcast, and Best Prostate Cancer Podcast per feedspot.com.
And you'll have to choose which ones we did not give ourselves. How do people get a hold of us, Donna?
You can call us and ask about our awards that we made up at 512-238-0762, and our website is armormenshealth.com, where you can send your questions that we'll answer anonymously, and you can see our really cute faces smiling.
Today we are joined by one of my really great friends, Dr. Declan Fleming, an associate professor at UT Dell Medical School in the department of general surgery or surgical oncology?
The department's surgery and perioperative care, and the division is surgical oncology.
He's so busy.
So, Dr. Fleming or Declan, I'm a surgeon.
Yes, you are.
And there are very few surgeons that make me, not feel like I have as big balls.
Your inferiority complex?
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he's one of them.
Oh,
like when there's a case, if your mom out there is diagnosed with a bad disease and they go to their surgeon, they're like, well, this may not be something that we can operate on. Mm-hmm. You pull out Dr. Fleming.
That's exactly what we did.
And I did for your own mother,
for my mom,
Donna.
Yeah.
For your own mother.
That's right.
Your own mother had something that people thought was not going to be really easy to operate.
Mm-hmm.
I called up Declan, and he and I went in and took care of her problem. And
right.
Exactly.
And you are just such a badass.
Oh, man.
Such a badass. And many of you out there may not know what that means, but that is, the body is so complicated and has, just in its normal state, it's complicated.
Yeah.
Forget about sticking a huge 15-centimeter tumor right in the middle of it and making everything grow around it. And then all of a sudden, you got to take this out and save somebody's life. It takes a lot of courage on the doctor's part to be able to take the life of patients' hands into your own hands,
It's funny how you just get used to the idea of doing that over the years. I mean, if you think about the stuff that you do regularly right now, how fantastic was that when you first started?
Absolutely.
You literally could not imagine the things that now you and I do routinely.
And everything we do is a big part of that guy's month, right? Like, he's been looking forward to that surgery. He's had to take time off work.
Yeah.
And we're like, I hope somebody shows up on time today because I got to, get to lunch at them. Because it's such a routine part of our day, but such a big part of that patient's life of what they're going through.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm doing prostate cancer and relatively easy, thankfully, for most of my patients' things. You're dealing with some really, really, really heavy things. And what I wanted to talk about was kind of what's the difference that patients should be seeking, like what kinds of cancers, what kind of medical conditions, really should they be seeking academic level care like you're providing and just, community-based care? Because although I hate to admit it, I guess there's some role for the academic centers.
I think there are a few. The really great thing about being in Austin is that the level of care that people are able to receive from the private practitioners here in town is just so high. It's really extraordinary.
It's a very competitive market.
It is.
And if you're not a good doctor in Austin, you're not going to make it here.
Right. Just to get in town. When I first moved here, it's been 21 years ago now, I interviewed with a couple of the chief medical officers for a couple of the hospitals. And one of them literally told me, oh, yeah, we really don't need you here. I was coming from MD Anderson.
Are you sure? Maybe look at my resume again.
But, his point was, we've got people that are able to do things that are really complex, that take a great level of skill, and we've been doing them well for a while. But what we're seeing, I think now, this is shown in a number of different areas, is that if you can have your care delivered by somebody that is doing this frequently, that is all he or she is thinking about, that all they're concentrating on, that they're doing the same complex bits of the operation over and over again, that you're going to have a better outcome. I think that the thing that academic centers are doing well are they're really good about organizing multidisciplinary review, so that instead of being taken from one practitioner to the next to sort of assemble your team ad hoc, that there are people that are concentrating on that.
So if you need an oncologist and a radiation oncologist, right, and a general surgeon,
right,
and a GI doctor and an internal medicine doctor.
And an interventional radiologist,
yes,
endocrinologist, all those things. Having those people all in a place where they're meeting every single week, the vast majority of the people that come in, just as a matter of practice, you're going to get all those people reviewing this and giving their opinion. So it's not one person's brain or one person's habits that are driving the care process. It's some level of scrutiny that's outside of just one individual, and people have to come to consensus. And that's been shown over and over again.
And we talk about that a lot on the show. It's this idea that if you only have one particular skill set, everyone's going to look like that,
brown
right?
Brown shoe store, right?
So if you're the brown shoe store, yeah. I mean, if you're a surgeon and then you don't think something's resectable, for example, and you just kind of throw your hands of it, the idea of a multidisciplinary team can say, well, listen, you may not be able to get rid of it all, but now I have this that can help get rid of this,
right,
and we can extend this person's life by this much.
Right.
And it does require, because there's so much medical knowledge out there, the idea that one person could somehow, except for me, imbibe all of it is just so, it's fantastical.
No one is going to be completely familiar with the latest of every little aspect of treatment, right? Because I spend a lot of time treating GI cancers, I'm really familiar with a lot of the chemotherapy things. I know the doses of radiation therapy that people can and should receive and all the rest of that.
But I'm not doing it.
right? But even with that, literally every single week, we've got a group of medical oncologists that are in what's called new drug discovery, right? So what they're doing is they are doing the clinical trials of the brand new medicines that have been used, in the dish to kill certain types of cancer cells are on rats, and they understand the science behind it, but it's just now being used in humans, and they're trying to figure out what's the right dose, what's tolerable, what's not tolerable. And because they're in this network of people that do that, they're finding out about all the positive results from different early stage clinical trials, and they understand where the field is going, not just what's being done commonly now. And being able to bring that to bear and understanding, maybe we can't treat you with this now, but in 6 months there's going to be this clinical trial that comes out. And so what we need to do is we need to find a way to arrest or slow what's going on for the next 6 months, and we can get you enrolled in this trial, and then that's going to be something that...
That sounds all well and great, but my mother just got diagnosed with cancer,
yeah,
and they told her she's going to die. So there's no time to waste, Dr. Fleming. Tell me about that, the urgency that comes with a new cancer diagnosis and the pressures and stress that come with a disease that's been developing for 10 years.
Well, that's the problem is, right, your house is on fire, but it's been burning in the basement for 5 years before you recognize that there's something going on. And the truth of the matter is, cancer doesn't speed up at the moment that it's diagnosed.
It's not like you found it and now it's like, well, I better start causing some trouble.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we know that, for instance, pancreas cancer is a cancer that I treat really frequently. And the treatment of pancreas cancer has really shifted dramatically over the last few years. Our initial way of dealing with it was, well, as soon as you see someone with a cancer, if you can do an operation, do the dang operation, get that thing out of there because it makes a huge difference. But what we were finding is that people would go through this enormous surgery, and 2.5 or 3 months later, they've got metastatic disease. They've got cancer that's spread to other parts of the body. And a spot treatment like a surgery does not deal with metastases, does not deal with cancer that is diffusely spread. that it will never successfully treat something that's spread out. And so, in essence, we did this huge surgery trying to deal with a spot when it was already spread. There's no way that person did not already have spread of the cancer into other parts of the body when that surgery was done. It was just that it was not yet able to be identified with the tests that we have. We don't have things that are sensitive enough to pick it up.
We're going to be right back to talk a little bit more about pancreatic cancer. We're joined again by Dr. Declan Fleming, associate professor at UT Dell Medical School, a really good friend of mine, a badass surgeon, and just someone who really is after my own heart when it comes to understanding emotional, body, kind of physical aspects of new cancer diagnosis and what kind of makes things better. Yeah. In the last segment, we discussed some of the emotional timeliness that kind of gets impressed upon people when they get diagnosed with cancer. Oftentimes, I'll diagnose with somebody with prostate cancer and say, well, listen, I'm not going to operate on you for 12 weeks. We want things to calm down. And they're awestruck. Like, right. Don't you understand? I was just diagnosed with cancer. I'm like, yes, I told you. You know?
Right. And so that came from me.
That was my words.
Right. Well, there's not a single person that doesn't want that problem dealt with yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. Because you feel like something's already gone horribly wrong and you've been wasting time. Even if you just found out about it, even if you're told it's early stage, it is so terrifying to have that diagnosis given to you.
There's guilt, I think, exactly what you're talking absolutely. About. But when it comes to getting through treatment the best, whether it be surgery or radiation or chemo, we're not all really healthy to start with. And so when you are about to embark upon a treatment that's going to take something away, I mean, no matter what we do, it's going to take a toll on you.
Yeah.
You want to get into that in the best way possible. So in prostate surgery, we do pelvic floor physical therapy, we do erectile rehabilitation therapy, and we do nutrition therapy, and we've seen a big benefit. And you have two before big major abdominal surgery. I'd like you to tell us more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a concept known broadly as prehabilitation, which is the things that you're doing.
So instead of rehabilitation after the injury,
right,
it's before the injury.
It is prehabilitation. The idea is that to be normal and functional and healthy, you've got to be at a certain level. So just imagine sort of a horizontal line running down. If I'm above the line, I'm at home, I'm functional, I'm doing the things that I would want to do. 100% of the people that I treat, similar to you, I hurt. Everybody gets an injury. And most of those people, for a time, are injured to a degree that they can't do all their
normal things. They go below their line.
Right, they go below their line. And the idea is that, well, don't take somebody who's just barely at the line and subject them to a big injury. Do something to build that person's functional and self-sufficiency and resiliency level up beforehand. So back in the sort of early to mid 2000s, people started thinking about doing this. The problem was the people that were trumpeting the idea of doing this were all people that had this idea that, well, what we're going to do is we're going to get people in great cardiovascular shape. And so they were sitting in people on exercise bicycles and telling, pedal as fast as you can for as long as you can, and we're going to get you in great shape. Well, indeed, it improved people's cardiac function, but it didn't necessarily make them more resilient or more able to withstand the surgery. Our idea around prehabilitation has really evolved over the last several years, and we know that, yeah, cardiovascular fitness is really important, but also doing something to help your core, to help your balance, teaching people mindfulness, helping them to become more able to tolerate stress, emphasizing nutrition. Nutrition is an enormous aspect of this because, as you can imagine, to heal from any sort of wound or heal from any treatment, your body has to be in a place where it is building protein, right? And if you're in a protein
depleting
consuming
way,
state,
yeah, yeah.
There's no way you can heal.
Anabolic and catabolic, yes.
Right, exactly. So we did a program at the University of Texas where we did a four-week prehabilitation program for people where they, this was home-based. The first session, they learned how to do the exercises we wanted them to do. We gave them nutritional supplements. We gave them a schedule to follow. And then they did all this at home with a video to help them remind them what to do. We actually did this really cool thing. I was working with exercise science people in the Department of Kinesiology. And there's this thing called blood flow restriction training where you put bands that are like little blood pressure cuffs on the top of your at the top of your arms and the top of your legs. And then you do exercises. What's been shown is that if you can have people do sub-maximal effort, so not quite as physically straining exercise.
And it still builds the muscle
up. And it builds it as if they were doing the absolute max sprints and heaviest lifts and all the rest of that. And we did this for 4 weeks. The hardest part was convincing people that it was okay to wait for 4 weeks
because they just got diagnosed with cancer.
Exactly.
And you're trying to kill my mother.
Right. But
stop having her exercise.
But when you tell people, this is going to hurt you, it's going to take quite some time to recover. The quicker you recover, the quicker you get on to either other treatment or back to normal
life.
To get to this point, this cancer's been in you and growing and changing for 3 to 5 years. 4 weeks is a drop in the bucket. It's not going to change. And we proved that. The stage of the cancer didn't change during that time. Nobody lost out on being able to be treated. And these people, we had a group that got the treatment and we compared them to a group that didn't. And we found that their length of stay in the hospital dropped in half, went from 10 days to 5 days, and their incidence of major complications dropped from one person in every three down to one person in every eight.
These are incredibly huge differences in outcome. It's outstanding. This idea that functional intervention, just to make you healthier before surgery, if you're in the hospital 5 days less, what kind of difference that makes to your life?
All right. So I was telling you just a little while ago, I recently had a procedure for atrial fibrillation. Spent one night in the hospital after the procedure. Whole doctor's bill, $195,000.
Oh.
I know.
I
didn't know I was worth that much.
Maybe half that much.
But if you think about it, all right, so now that included the procedure, so that was a big chunk of it. But one day in the hospital right now is around $30,000. Just, you know, checking to the Hilton. So if you take that and we drop people's stay in the hospital, imagine how many billions of dollars we would save if we chose to say to people, you're not ready for this procedure yet. We're going to do something to make you better, and you're going to stay in the hospital for a shorter period of time.
And I think that it's some of our listeners may not recognize it, but if you need multiple steps in your procedure, if you're supposed to get chemo before surgery or surgery before chemo, and you're not healthy enough, you don't get the chemo.
Right.
And then you die.
Right, exactly.
Because you're not healthy enough.
The people with complex cancers that survive their cancers are the ones that get each of the individual components in sequence.
On time.
Exactly.
And with you as healthy as possible.
Exactly.
And I would just urge you, as you do your next levels, to really think about sleep and stress. We in our clinic have started initiating sleep bracelets with the WHOOP program. There are sleep mats that you can do that judge a person's sleep. And just, it's, you know, that Heisenberg principle, when you measure it, you change it, right?
Yes.
And so just by having people focus on their stress levels, their pain after surgery, their recovery after surgery improves. Because you know, a lot of times in the clinic, which person's going to require the most pain meds. The one that's real tense.
Right.
Are you sure you're going to have enough morphine for me? I'm worried about pain.
Right.
That guy's going to be sitting in bed for 3 days,
hooked up to
pain meds, and he's going to last in the hospital longer.
Well, you know, it's really clear that the people that require more narcotic pain medicines have worse outcomes. The more we can do to keep people from ever having to need narcotics, whether that be doing acupuncture or hypnosis or, you know, we do, anybody who has an abdominal operation, we're doing a nerve block of the nerves coming from the back around the abdominal muscles.
You taught me this amazing TAPS block.
Yeah, it's incredible. And those people, their narcotic consumption has dropped by about 90% compared to otherwise. And if you can do Tylenol, Motrin, blocks, some stretching, some exercise, things like that, and avoid the narcotics, your stay in the hospital is going to be shorter, your complication incidence is going to be lower. Huge, huge differences from things that have less to do with medicine and more to do with preparation.
And so those listeners that have may just been joining us, let me assure you of something. Dr. Declan Fleming and I are badass surgeons. We live and breathe operating. We've been doing it for decades.
Yeah.
We only dreamed in our lives that we would get to operate. And now we're talking about high fiber diets, nutrition, and stress management.
And like meditation.
Like we were some kind of yogis on a mountain. And what do we know? It makes a big difference.
It is.
And it lets us operate more.
It does. It does. And again, you and I, we know 100% of the people that we treat, we hurt. We're going to injure everybody. but it's injury with a purpose.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And if we can minimize the injury, prepare people for it, get them ready so they bounce back quicker, then everybody wins. And that's what we all go for.
Well, Dr. Fleming, I cannot thank you enough for joining us again. You're just an inspiration to me. I just love operating with you, and thank you so much for all that you do for the patients.
You know, I got to tell you, Sonny, that I'm just so appreciative to have you as a colleague. It's just awesome to be able to have a friend that I can work with and that we know we're going for the same thing for people. That's awesome.
Awesome. Well, Donna, how do people get a hold of us and get a message, Dr. Fleming?
That's right. You can reach out to us at armormenshealth.com, where you can submit an inquiry, and you can check out our podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts, 512-238-0762. Thank you, Dr. Fleming.
It's my pleasure.
The Armor Men's Health Hour is brought to you by urology specialists. For questions or to schedule an appointment, please call 512-238-0762 or online at armormenshealth.com.